Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I think,
Rich Campbell.
What do you know, the Campbell kid?
We're going to play football. Want to play?
Covering the Bears for the Chicago Tribune.
Yeah, Rich, we were, this has all been, well thought out.
Asking the tough questions.
John, what impressed you about Leonard Sack?
Rich Campbell with Spiegel and Parkins on The Score.
And this segment with Rich Campbell is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Wolves host Superhero Night, October 28th. He joins us by way of the Grossinger Auto Group hotline. Find over 5,000 vehicles every day at grossinger.com. We always appreciate his time. How's it going, Rich?
It's going great, fellas. How you doing?
It's going well. The Bears play.
Yeah, I got to reacquaint myself with the idea of football as a sport, and the Bears as a thing, because I've been a little Cub-focused. Bears play Sunday at noon, right, Rich?
2-4. They've got a new quarterback, and their defense is playing okay. So welcome back. Welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, see you later, buddy. We're caught up. No. Listen, obviously I love football, and let's sink our teeth into this here.
I love it, too.
What I was thinking about with having you on today was we all talked a lot, training camp. Your central question was, how are the Bears going to score? Well, they're 28th in the NFL in points per game, and they've had a defensive touchdown, a running back pass touchdown, a punter pass touchdown. Do you have any sense of whether or not this team can score conventionally consistently yet?
Yes, I do have that sense, and the answer is no. I mean, they just can't. That's why they've had to continue to go to these, trick plays and some of the unconventional methods. At some point, you hit the bottom of that bag and you're reaching around and nothing's there. I would say this. Remember the Steelers game when the Bears expressed their surprise that the Steelers played with two high safeties and tried to take away the pass, and the Bears were more than happy to run the ball. And they pounded the run in that game, went for over 200 yards, and they won. So I was astounded again on Sunday when Mitch Trubisky came to the podium after the game and said, look, the Ravens were playing a lot more too high safety than we ever expected. Dow Loggins said they had played one snap of it all season. And here they went to this too high safety look against the Bears for the entire game. And what did the Bears do? They ran all over it. They say, thank you very much. I will be stunned if teams continue to back off the line of scrimmage, because the only way the Bears are moving the ball consistently is on the ground with Jordan Howard and the offensive line doing what they do well. I'm shocked that teams just continue to outthink themselves about this. But for me, that's the only path the Bears can be consistent on in terms of moving the ball and then scoring.
You know, the running of the ball has been incredibly effective, and so many of them there. Will they just stay that way until they firmly establish that play action gives Mitch the best opportunities? How often do we expect him to actually just drop back and look through his progressions with a straight pass play?
Well, I think it's rare, but there are a lot of reasons for that. I mean, first of all, he's a rookie, and you saw Sunday against the Ravens, if you were tuned in, that the Ravens were really trying to prevent and on the move and doing what he does well, throwing on the run and using that bootleg and keeper game to open up the passing game. So that's why they tried to spread the defense out a little bit, and they had Terrell Suggs on the edge, who's a really, really good player, and he was disruptive throughout that game Sunday. But you also have this issue of the undermanned receiving core, and it's Tanner Gentry's limited route running ability, and the same goes for Trey McBride. Just don't forget, neither of those two guys made an NFL roster at the end of training camp, and both of them have cleared waivers. You know, both of them were on the practice squad as recently as October 2nd, which tells you what the rest of the league thinks about these guys. So, I'm not trying to be disrespectful to them, but it's just how it is. I mean, those guys are not the game-changing, physically gifted receivers that other teams have, that teams need to get a passing game going at full throttle. It's just going to be a terrible handicap for Trubisky's development for the next 10 games. It's really unfortunate that the Bears don't have that element to their offense. And they're going to have to figure out ways for Trubisky to not only develop productively, but at some point, he's got to be able to take the risks downfield and throw these guys open. That's something that they touted big time coming out of North Carolina, his accuracy and his ability to throw guys open. How does that mix with how conservative and careful they want him to be with the ball? To me, it doesn't mix well. We're going to have to see how it continues to play out.
Rich Campbell from the Tribune is our guest. I think that we sometimes lose, you know, it's only been two games of the Mitch Trubisky experience, and I am in no way, shape, or form here sitting here and defending the Bears organizationally or their talent on offense. I think certainly after the injuries, they have clearly the worst group of pass-catching talent in the NFL. But the Panthers' defense, Rich, in terms of defensive stats, 9th in points per game allowed, 7th in passing yards per game allowed, 5th in rushing yards per game allowed. And there's at least an argument that it is the easiest of the three defenses that Mitch Trubisky has faced with the Vikings and the Ravens. So after this game, it is going to get substantially easier for Mitch to do something.
Yeah, and that's the light at the end of the tunnel. And you look at the Panthers' defense and the success they've had really is anchored in their front seven. That secondary of theirs doesn't really stand out. They've really torn that group down since they went to the Super Bowl a couple years ago. And their safety rotation is kind of old and kind of slow, and none of their corners really have established themselves as elite players. So I'm with you. There are going to be opportunities as we go for us to say, all right, maybe they let Mitch throw it a little bit, or maybe he's got more opportunities down the field. And you know, we'll just have to see how each of these games goes. I would just say that his inexperience is going to show up, and it'll show up in different ways, whether it's, you know, setting a protection, whether it's recognizing certain defenses through disguises. And it's going to be up to the coaching staff and Mitch to develop and progress in a way that he has command and that he can take advantage of these matchups. Because I'm with you, they will be there. And there were even times on Sunday, you know, for as much as we knocked the Bears receivers, there were open guys that Trubisky wasn't recognizing. He's in this grace period right now where it's sort of categorized as, all right, these are developmental opportunities rather than he's missing receivers and it's a panic mode, kind of like it was with Mike Glennon. So can Trubisky take this grace period and improve himself so by the end of the year when they're playing the 49ers, the Browns, the Bengals, that they can actually move the ball through the air?
Rich Campbell from the Chicago Tribune is our guest on the Spiegelman Parkins Show. If I'm hearing you guys correctly, it sounds like you're both saying, let him throw, let him throw.
Have you heard the new song yet, Rich?
I haven't heard the new song, no.
Okay,
no.
Okay, you can tune in during the noon hour.
Yeah.
I'll have to. It's such an interesting dynamic because John Fox has to win. They have to win. And he is convinced, and I think he's right, that they got to protect the ball to win. So this idea of Trubisky kind of figuring out what throws he can get away with, what windows he can exploit, what he can't, you know, that doesn't necessarily mesh with, okay, kid, you're in the game now, and we just need you to manage this and let our defense do the heavy lifting.
Well, here we are, Rich. Here we are at the at the cross purposes of front office and head coach. And we thought it would rear its head this year. And I think we first thought it would rear its head, and maybe it did, on how long to stick with the veteran to try and get wins as opposed to go to the kid. You know, that's water under the bridge. But now we've got the kid here, and we've got the cross purposes. John Fox trying to win games when the entire year is about the education of Mitch Trubisky. How delusional is John Fox about their actual chances within a division that doesn't have Aaron Rodgers anymore? And does that permeate things, or is it about saving his hide?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I think it's the latter. And one of the more interesting revelations at House Hall this week was Mitch talking more about the 3rd-and-11 completion that he had in overtime to really set up the game-winning field goal. It was by far his best play of the day, and really the one foothold that the public could grab onto as saying, look, we got our guy. You know, he made this athletic throw in a clutch situation to set up the win. And what I thought was so interesting about that, it's 3rd-and-11, and they're sort of on the edge of field goal range, probably out of it. And Dow Loggins got in his headset and said, you got to be aggressive here, because if we don't get this first down, we got to punt. And that was a directive that take the reins off, Mitch. Take a shot. And so with the pocket collapsing and Kendall Wright not particularly open, Trubisky contorted his body, made a throw, and it was complete. They won the game because of it. So that was a direct example of them sort of turning him loose, taking the reins off that are otherwise on him. And you saw what he could do. Now, is it going to work out well every time they do that? Of course not. So can he get to the point where he's got their trust and the receiving core does enough to earn the trust that he can throw it a little bit? That's one of the major storylines from now through the final 10 games.
We have breaking baseball news. The Nationals have announced that Dusty Baker will not return as their manager.
Wow.
We will react to that in a little bit. We also have Cubs voicemails to get to after we continue talking to Rich Campbell of the Chicago Tribune.
I heard some stuff about the Nationals over the last couple days. I look forward to having that conversation later.
So we'll do that in a few minutes after we're done talking with Rich. Rich, Mitch Trubisky threw two games. Better than you expected? Worse than you expected? Exactly as you expected?
Closer to exactly. I think we've seen times where the athleticism shines, and you can easily see why the Bears drafted him and why so many people believe he's going to be a good player, why he had success at the amateur levels. And this goes on the, you know, for on the field, off the field, the way he carries himself. I think he's been everything we thought he would be. And it just stinks for everybody involved that the receiving core is so limited, because you just feel like you can't see his full potential. It's like taking a Ferrari out and only being allowed to drive in first or second gear. It's just like, okay, he's just going to have to wait till next season, till they overhaul this receiving core, which they're going to do in the offseason, and then see what he can come back with. And in the meantime, you got to cling to a 3rd-and-11 pass on a day he went 8-for-16. I think overall, he needs to improve that completion percentage and be closer to 60% at least. I mean, he's at 48.8 right now, which is too low. You're not going to win many games like that. It obviously puts no margin for error on the defense. But overall, I think he's, you know, all things considered with the receiving core and everything, I think he's been what we thought. There have been problems, there have been turnovers, there have been missed opportunities, and then there's those flashes that keep you coming back.
So Kyle Fuller has been brilliant. They didn't pick up his option year. What is your perception of their relationship and the chances of Kyle Fuller re-signing here?
Well, I would just say that in terms of the re-signing talk, it is just far too premature to go down that road. I mean, yes, he had a terrific game against the Ravens, but you can find examples earlier this season that will scare off the Bears management. And there was a play in the Pittsburgh game where Fuller basically fell down and Pittsburgh had an open touchdown. Roethlisberger just didn't get to that read. Fuller was in coverage of Kyle Rudolph on the touchdown in the Vikings game that helped swing that game late. So Fuller played great. There's no question on Sunday. He's healthy. He's staying with his receiver in man-to-man. He's contesting catches. He's always been a willing tackler, and he's a starting caliber cornerback the way he's playing right now. I just think that the sample size is still small enough. You let this thing play out, and then the Bears are going to have some decisions to make at the end of this. And you know, there was a question in the organization as recently as the summer about how he fit mentally, you know, his personality into this culture. That has healed a bit because of the positive play. I mean, the guy's healthy, so you're in a better mindset overall. Then you start making good plays. Everything starts to get a little bit rosier, but it's only through game six. Let's see how it continues to go. I think they're going to go back to the three-corner rotation this week with Marcus Cooper getting a little bit healthy, and we'll have to see how Fuller holds up. But so far, overall, so good.
What's your pick for the game?
I think it's going to be close, and I just picked Panthers 20, Bears 16. Just one of those things that comes down to a play here or there, but I'm really interested to see if Kelvin Benjamin is going to play. Luke Kuechly is battling the concussion, so it's possible the Panthers are without their best defensive player and one of their main passing game threats. And if that goes the Bears' way, then they have a real chance of winning on Sunday.
Rich, you didn't seem too excited about our song when we brought it up, about our next Mitch Trubisky song.
Well, you guys kind of cut out on the cell, so I was just trying to play it cool. But I will have to tune in for it for sure.
Right. We will send it to you because I know you like to jog around Wrigleyville, so we can get you all five right. Tracks on there for your pump up. Okay, buddy?
All right, yeah, give me the LP, and I'll put it on my phone.
All right, see you, Rich.
Have a great weekend, guys.
What a patronizing bunch of crap that was.
Huh? Tune in every Monday to Built Ford Tough Bears Monday, brought to you by your local Ford stores. This segment was brought to you by KFC. Get the classic fried chicken taste with a $10 chicken share. KFC, it's still finger-looking good.
Check out our live video stream at 670thescore.com, brought to you by Marvel Universe Live at Allstate Arena November 2nd through the 5th, marveluniverselive.com.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
You can always call the show anytime at 312-729-3965. The Spiegel and Parkins voicemail line brought to you by TheraWorks Relief. To relieve muscle cramps in your legs and feet, use TheraWorks Relief. This fast-acting foam is clinically proven to relieve leg and foot cramps. Get TheraWorks Relief today at TheraWorksRelief.com. We have Jonah Carey in 15 minutes. You know, everyone's always wanted to know, score callers with the ability to curse, what would it sound like? After
welcome
the Cubs got eliminated.
Spiegel and Parkins voicemail line.
Hey, it's Matt from Kansas City. These Cubs have made me resort to crushing up my anti-anxiety medication and snorting it. I think I have a better chance of winning the lottery than Rizzo or Bryant getting a hit.
Yeah, Andy from Iguanago. You know, I really wish they got Verlander instead of this pitcher named Quintana. Garbage.
This guy sucks.
It's the top of the third, Turner just drove in Taylor, and I've been doing some drinking, and I've been doing some thinking, and the Dodgers are good. Might just be their year.
Well, it's 7-0 Dodgers in the third. Let's see what the Bulls are doing. Oh, God, never mind.
Al from Elk Grove, I sure hope Theo kept his receipts for the two pieces of that he's traded for at the trade line line.
Yeah, sitting here watching the game, having a pretty intense debate. Maybe you guys can help us out on this one. Do you think Chris Bosio would make a better garden gnome or a better elf on the shelf?
Cotton-headed ninny muggins.
Oh, my God. This is Shaky from Bedford Park. This is unbelievable. This is the bottom of the fourth. They suck. www.pornhub.com.
Yeah, Bob from Bartlett. Wasn't that nice? Down 9-0. Hey, but at least a sleepy dwarf over there at third base finally came alive with a bat, huh? Hey, finally can get a home run, huh? Down 9-0. You can finally find your bat and hit one out of there, huh? Well, maybe in the offseason you get some nice sleep and rest up so you're not so tired next year. What's your buddy over at first base there, Tony over there? What's his excuse? That can't hit a ball out of a park.
Does someone need a hug?
Hi, this is Bob from Cicero. Too bad the TV didn't cover the seventh inning stretch conducted by former Cub and all-around ham, David Ross. Well, now you guys on the score get to talk about the Bulls all the time. So I hope Platypus Parkins is happy.
Got the platypus.
Yeah, this is Brendan from Evergreen Park. And the only thing that boggles my mind more than the Cubs' brutal play this series, the appearance all of a sudden of all the White Sox fans who have been silent since the Rajay Davis two-run homer in the eighth inning in Game 7 last year.
Please go away for the love of God!
Yeah, Steve from Bartlett. You know, I heard many say when the trade for Quintana came down that it was like trading for a Mercedes. Then some others said, no, it was like trading for a Buick. No, you know what it was trading for? A Hugo with four flat tires.
Hey, this is Ron from Rockford. I'm live from the bleachers in Brooklyn. You can hear the crowd emotion. Everybody out here. Screw you, Turner! Screw you, you leprechaun-looking...
Marty from Bridgman. The Cubs should have spent more time in preparing for the LCS instead of in the beauty parlor getting their hair styled and or colored.
Get off my lawn.
Hi, this is Sarah. I'm from Fulton, Illinois, and I just like to say thank God the Cubs lost because I'm sick and tired of my husband bitching and complaining and being in a bad mood. I'm tired of it. I used to watch the Cubs with my grandpa, and my husband has ruined it.
Jesus, she's terrifying.
End of mailbox.
Wow. That is strong.
Oh, man.
Platypus Parkins.
You are a semi-aquatic egg-laying mammal.
I've always said, you remind me of a platypus. That is the oddest thing I've ever heard.
Out of nowhere, these drive-bys.
The Parkins drive-bys. The woman at the end whose husband has ruined Cub games for her after she used to watch it with her grandpa.
Blames me.
Yeah, just gets you with a drive-by.
That's fantastic stuff. 312-729-3965. Have it ready for Bears games this Sunday. Let's get an update.
Scoreboard update.
From the Chicago Wolves Update Studio, I'm Joe Ostrowski. The Wolves are home tomorrow night and Sunday afternoon at Allstate Arena. The first 1,000 kids on Sunday will receive a free GameWorks gift card. Check out ChicagoWolves.com for all promotion and ticket information. Dusty Baker, or Baker.
You made a mistake.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
How you feeling, Joe?
Feeling all right. How was it Friday for you? Clemson?
Oh, dude.
Yeah, that was rough.
It was painful from a lot of different directions.
Okay. I was thinking you had to enjoy it on some level, but...
I did, but that it was a problem because I couldn't really enjoy it outwardly because, right. You know, it's potentially ruining my wife's chances of her team winning a title again, and, you know, it's all... And I'm losing money at the time. It's all very uncomfortable.
We're going to go best first or worst first?
4-14
is not good.
That ain't great, Speaks.
No. I hope people are fading me. If you're fading me, you're doing better.
Fademe.com.
Yeah. If you're fading me, you're doing better than Ostrowski.
All right, Speaks. Whom do you prefer?
I prefer the following squadrons to win the game. Give me a Minnesota -4.5 at home against the Ravens. Deeply unimpressed with the Ravens was I this past week.
It's 5.5.
I got 4.5.
Vegas Insider consensus line.
I'm looking at Vegas Insider.
It's 5.5 because I'm picking that game too.
Thank you. I got Minnesota -5.5. Then thank you. Deeply unimpressed with the Ravens. And whether it's Case Keenum or Sam Bradford, I'm a more believer in Minnesota offense than I was last week or the week before. I prefer them. I prefer Dallas on the road minus a pile of points at San Francisco. I know all of San Francisco losses have been close, but I'm not buying it. And now that Zeke Elliott is going to play, I think Dallas will hammer CJ Beathard and the Niners on the road. So fade that one, everybody. And give me Denver. I have Denver +1 at the Chargers.
I have it as a pick.
Okay. Give me Denver as a pick 'em over the Chargers. They should be pissed off after they let me down last week and everybody else. I got Denver cleaning up on the road, but it's not really because it's the freaking Chargers who don't have a crowd or a stadium. That's who I prefer.
Joe Ostrowski, whom do you prefer?
Speed, we're going oppo. I prefer the Ravens +5.5. Case Keenum. He's favored by 5.5 as a quarterback, 2 touchdowns last 3 weeks. Joe Flacco's horrible, but I like their head coach, John Harbaugh. Minnesota getting 61% of the tickets makes sense. Baltimore getting 70% of the money right now. I'll go with the Sharps. I'll take the 5.5. Prefer the Ravens. I also do prefer, though, the Broncos in a pick'em at the Chargers. Total spot play. Denver embarrassed on Sunday Night Football against the Giants. The Chargers. There might be more Broncos fans like a couple of weeks ago with the Eagles, so I prefer the Broncos. Last one, I prefer the Packers +4 at home against the Saints. The Packers are home dogs, okay? Brett Hundley was in a horrible spot last week. I'm not judging him off of that. Gets a full week of preparation. I think the team rallies around him. I like the Saints a lot as a team, but I don't love them as much on the road, so I prefer the Packers +4.
Don't you guys have a question for me?
Whom do you prefer? La, la, la.
Yeah. Jacoby Brissett in a nice little story. I think it ends with Jacksonville's defense. Jacko only laying the 3. I know Fournette isn't there. Chris Ivory should be able to run through Indy on the road, no problem. I'm laying the 3 on the road with the Jaguars. I prefer the Cincinnati Bengals +5.5 coming off a bye at Pittsburgh. I think that line's a little big. People overreacting to Pittsburgh beating the Chiefs. There should be familiarity with it being a division game. I expect it to be low scoring, so 5.5 hopefully is enough to cover. I prefer the Jaguars, the Bengals, and the Bears.
Oh!
Bears, wow. Bears +4 at home. Cam Newton inconsistent. Devin Funchess, if he has to be the number one receiver with Kelvin Benjamin hobbled or not playing. Luke Kuechly might be not playing also. That's their best pass catcher and the best linebacker in football. You're giving me more than a field goal with a Bears defense that I believe in, with a quarterback in Cam Newton who will put it up for grabs, and an injured team. I'll take the Bears more than a field goal at home. I prefer the Bears, the Jaguars, and the Bengals. We'll find out who Eddie Olczyk prefers for the celebrities coming up at noon. Jonah Carey joins us to talk baseball and the future of the Cubs next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Follow him on Twitter at Jonah Carey. Download the Jonah Carey podcast. He joins us by way of the Grossinger Auto Group hotline. Find over 5,000 vehicles every day at grossinger.com. Had some time in Chicago recently watching the NLCS. How'd you enjoy the series in the city, Jonah?
I'm still in Chicago, and it's lovely. I have it in an Airbnb, and I don't think I ever want to leave. It's really nice. No, it's been beautiful weather, and I love coming here on many levels, and the series was a lot of fun. It's an interesting thing about the atmosphere in Wrigley. The first playoff game I covered in Wrigley was 2015, and that was the Schwarber game when he hit it over the scoreboard. They hit seven home runs, which was one of the craziest things I've ever seen in my entire life. And then last year was completely ridiculous. Like, I have this vivid memory of the first home game of the LCS and what that was like. And it was, I guess, it was the game one because it was a home team. And it was bonkers. Like, I mean, swarms of people and the atmosphere in the stadium and people swinging a bit, let's start the game, and singing and chanting, you know, way before the game. And then you get to game three, the first home game of the season, and it was not like that. And yes, the Dodgers were up 2-0, but it was just a big difference. But then in game four, with the Granderson strikeout that wasn't a strikeout or whatever, you got that back a little bit. And even at a time when the Cubs, obviously, they didn't, you know, not only did they not win the series, they were not really competitive. That moment, which was vitriol, of course, was anger, but it was like, oh yeah, that's good. That's Cubs fans. That's right. And then when they ultimately won game four, it was just kind of like a big, like, F you, like, you're not going to stomp on us. We've got something to say about it too. I really enjoyed that. It's not me pandering. I truly do have a good time here. And, you know, it can take a little bit for any fan base. Obviously, when you're down, it's not easy. But you get Cubs fans riled up, and they get pretty exciting.
No, that's a fair representation of those nights for sure. And then last night happens. I saw you were there last night.
Yeah, right.
Cub fans really never had a chance to get into that one.
Yeah, no question about it. And, you know, full credit to the Dodgers. I mean, they've had the best record in baseball for a reason this year, and that's it. I will say, and I talked about, I was doing TV all week for Sportsnet down in Canada, and they were, you know, they always ask me for analytics angles, so I'm trying to dig, and each game is different, whatever. I went back and looked. Coming into Game 5, the Cubs during the regular season had a batting average on balls in play of 302, batting average on balls in play, for people who don't know. If it's not a home run, meaning it's hit in play, but it's not a home run, does it fall in or not? And league average is, you know, in that 290 to 300 range. That's what it is for pretty much every team. It's whatever. So 302 during the regular season. During the LCS, it was 192. 192. That's like all of a sudden everybody's hitting like a pitcher on balls in play. That's bad luck. And if you ran this thing back, you know, maybe the Dodgers win 7 out of 10 times or whatever, 7 series out of 10. But the Cubs are more competitive. They just, nothing went their way. And yes, part of it can be responsible for the pitching, but the Cubs just didn't get any bloopers to fall. They didn't get any grounders through the hole. They didn't. And when you win baseball games or lose baseball games, skill is a big part of it, but luck is also a part of it, and the luck did not go the Cubs' way.
Jonah, I once had somebody in the Dodgers front office say, we're trying to do something that's never been done, which is to be a big market behemoth trying to win with a large payroll while also building the farm system. I just saw you wrote about them at CBSSports.com. How are they doing at this grand design?
Well, would the Chicago Cubs qualify as that? I feel like that's, we're talking about the same thing. These two teams are mirror images of each other. I mean, there's no question about it in my mind. They absolutely did that. And you know, I'm going to bring this up. It'll end up being a plug, but I wrote a book called The Extra 2%, which was about a guy named Andrew Friedman and a manager named Joe Maddon, and they presided over a team that, you know, had no money. And so they said, okay, we got to do everything possible. We got to turn over every rock. We got to go find these, you know, little spots in the wilderness, needles in the haystack, Ben Zobrist in 2006. You know, we got to do what we got to do and find and look and do everything that we got to do. I mean, Chris Taylor is Ben Zobrist, and the Dodgers are the Rays, and the Cubs are the Rays. I mean, it's all the same stuff. It's just you have more resources, you execute a little bit better, and you get more luck, and that's what happens. And I didn't dispute that the Dodgers spent money. The number that I went and did some payroll digging, the Dodgers paid Scott Kazmir $17 million to not pitch. They paid Hector Oliveira $4 million change. They paid Matt Kemp, and they paid Carl Crawford almost $22 million to not play a game this season. He's retired. I mean, they had basically $92 million in dead money this year. The Reds had a payroll of $90 million. So there's no question that money is a big factor. But who won the game yesterday? It was basically Kike Hernandez, Chris Taylor, and Charlie Culberson. Three backup shortstops. Those are the three guys competing for the 25th man on the roster this year. Two of them, I think one of them went on the DL, one of them made the team, and one of them got sent back to the minors. Taylor became an all-star caliber player. Culberson was out of his mind in the series. And my goodness, I mean, obviously for Cubs fan, it wasn't fun, but Kike went bonkers last night. It was insane what happened. And that is a tribute to really turning over those rocks and looking for the 2% edge and doing all that stuff. The Cubs did it magnificently last season. And by the way, it's still basically the same team. They have a whole bunch of guys, in addition to the homegrown guys, that they've picked up for relatively nothing and they've made into great players, like Jake Arrieta is a great example. And the Dodgers are this year's version of the Cubs. And really both of them are the version of the Tampa Bay Rays from 10 years ago.
Jonah Carey is our guest. We'll talk to Eddie Olczyk in about 10 minutes or so at noon, get his NFL picks and catch up with Edzo, see how he's feeling. We're looking forward to that. Everyone knows the problems and what's facing them this offseason, right? Arrieta, Lackey, gone most likely, almost assuredly. Wade Davis gone almost assuredly. Need the bullpen, maybe a leadoff hitter, things like that. We know they can afford it in free agency, but what about trades of the young core? If I told you Almora, Schwarber, Baez, Happ, do you think it's more likely that they're all back or one of them is traded?
The big issue with the Cubs, you know, last year, they won it all and it was great, but the pitching staff was not the lineup. And Verducci did a great job of it in his book, The Cubs Way, but I mean, anybody who's written about the Cubs, talked about the Cubs on the radio, not a secret. You know, Rizzo was a trade, but, you know, more or less a guy who was brought up and kind of developed or whatever. Russell was a trade, but same idea. Brian was homegrown. Schwarber was homegrown. All these guys are homegrown. Pitching wasn't like that. They were kind of making do. They hit the jackpot with Arrieta. Hendricks turned into a poor man's Maddox. I mean, these things happen, but it wasn't, you know, scouting and player development and all that stuff. It was just kind of, they really did well. They got a little bit of luck and they turned guys around. You could look at a situation where the Almoras and Haps aren't necessarily traded for another Wade Davis, you know, the way the Slayer deal was, but that they're traded for an equivalent player who happens to throw a baseball. I mean, I think that is the most logical course of action because the Cubs not only need pitching, they need sustainably pitching. You lose Arrieta and Lackey. I don't know that John Lester is going to be all that good over the next few years. I mean, he wasn't very consistent this year, and he had all sorts of problems. So you're down to what, Kyle Hendricks and maybe Mike Montgomery becomes the starting pitcher? I mean, they have work to do. And I think that rather than go out and throw a whole bunch of money at old starting pitchers, which is a very bad strategy and can really blow up in your face many, many times, I think the prospect or the young guy thing about trading the Almoras and the Haps comes down to who is the pitching version of Ian Happ? Cool. You want to do a one-for-one or you want to make a two-for-one or something like that? Let's do business. So I think that just from that standpoint, to get themselves not only some present-day quality, but maybe some longevity when it comes to their pitching, it's almost a necessity, to be honest.
And then they've got bullpen stuff to worry about, too, in addition to those starters. They've got lots of bullpen issues to concern themselves with. Look at the Yankees' bullpen. Some of those guys are going to be available. The Astros need to improve their bullpen, too. I mean, it's a crazy thing to try and do in the free agent market sometimes, right?
Yeah, it's such a funny thing. You know, I've done a bunch of media hits or whatever during the playoffs, and it's always, oh, let's talk about this bullpen. And gee, look at the Yankees. Doesn't everybody need to build a super bullpen? Yeah, that's great. That's like saying every team needs to be good, because how do you build a super bullpen? You get as many good pitchers as you can. Some of them go in the rotation. You throw the rest in the bullpen. That's what it is. You can't just go out and sign five closers and build your bullpen. Three of them are going to fail, or two of them are going to fail. One of them is going to get injured. The other two will probably be earning about what they're, you know, making, and that's it. And so it's got to be a situation where you just have a lot of surplus quality in your organization. You can go out and find a Strope. You can go out and do some things on the margins here and there, but you really just need a lot of quality arms. Who are the Yankees relievers? Dellin Betances was the starting pitching prospect. Chad Green might have been a starting pitcher. Aroldis Chapman, absolutely. Well, I mean, he was signed as a free agent, but you know, when he came out of Cuba, it seemed like he might be a starting pitcher. These are just a lot of good arms who happen to be throwing in the bullpen. And I'll go you one further. Houston's bullpen was not bad during the regular season, especially in the first half. In fact, it was excellent. Ken Giles was really good. Chris Devensky was an all-star. Will Harris had that great slider. This was a good bullpen, and suddenly they're terrible. Now, does that mean they're going to be sustainably terrible? No, it means that bullpens are impossible to predict because you're relying on basically one pitch can turn again, and you're relying on pitchers who are not as good as starters. That is a fundamental lesson. And if you want to, if you'll believe me, go tweet at Glenn Perkins and ask him this question. Glenn is a longtime, just retired major league veteran, a great closer in his prime or whatever. And if you ever get in a philosophical conversation with him about closers or relievers, he will tell you, and he's a closer, yeah, we're just inferior versions of starting pitchers. So when you start with an inferior product and you put them in high leverage situations, sometimes it works, but most of the times it fails. So yes, it's easy to say the Cubs need to fix their bullpen and got to go out and get six new guys. Hector Rondon could come right back and have a 1.87 ERA next year because that's how relief pitching works. It is unpredictable and impossible. If you try to build a super bullpen, you're probably going to fail.
At Jonah Carey on Twitter, read him at cbssports.com, download his podcast. Thank you, Jonah.
Thanks, Oz.
We enjoyed it. Glad you enjoyed Chicago. I haven't seen it, but Campy just told me in the screen that Luke Kuechly out against the Bears.
Oh, wow, yeah, he got the concussion, 10 days ago?
Yeah.
In their Thursday night game against Philly.
He's had multiple of them. Yeah. Best linebacker in the sport. That is huge for the Bears' running attack, especially. So,
I wrote a column, Parkins. I don't think I've written once since we've been together, which is crazy. I used to write
I haven't read it yet. I'm looking forward to
That's all right. I used to write a lot about baseball, and I should again, and I have been writing some at home and stuff like that. But anyway, I put a column up on 670thescore.com about saying goodbye to baseball, which I usually do. Somehow, some way, going to either see the Sox or the Cubs in the final week.
Yeah.
Lately, it's been Cubs in the playoffs as far as they go. And last night, all of a sudden, we found ourselves saying goodbye to baseball for 6 innings.
Yeah, it was a long goodbye. It was a long, drunken goodbye.
A really long time to decide how to spend your next 3 hours at a ballpark when the team is toast and people are progressively leaving.
You salute baseball in spring training. When it's over, do you moon it? What's the opposite of saluting?
It's also saluting,
okay.
Jay.
All right, a salute Jay. Goodbye.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you treat our military, but I salute coming and going, Jay.
What is the opposite of saluting? That's all I asked.
I don't know.
The opposite of saluting is not saluting.
You don't think so?
Should I poke some holes in that analogy of baseball is the military?
Well, no. But let me ask you this.
We want to settle in there.
When you salute when you're saying hello to somebody in the military, right? And don't you salute when you say goodbye as well, Jay? It's like shalom. It's like aloha.
Aloha, shalom, and the salute.
And the salute.
Yeah. Did that make the column?
No.
No, it didn't? Okay.
Next one.
Good. We are going to catch up with Edzo. I'm excited for this.
Me too.
Eddie Olczyk. He'll pick games. We'll tell stories. We'll talk. Eddie Olczyk next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.